Listen on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
Now at 5 o'clock, it's this week's edition of The Early Music Show with Hannah French.
Elegance, exuberance, and a high chance of thunderbolts. It can only mean that violinist Rachel Podge is here today in the Early Music Show studio. Rachel, welcome.
Thank you. That's quite the introduction.
Well, I'm sparing no blushes today. You are a soloist, a director, chamber musician, say nothing of ambassador, patron and collaborator. That list of richly deserved awards and accolades is as long as your arm. I'd happily spend the next hour talking about your solo albums, but today it's all about your group Brecon Baroque. All the music we hear is going to be you directing and playing with them. And, well, it's why we began with that moment from your latest album, The Muses Restored, the closing saraband from Matthew Locke's Little Consort in two parts for several friends in C minor and major. So, Brecon Baroque, Rachel, was it a thunderbolt moment, the early 2000s? Did you just think, now is the time for my own festival and band?
Yes, in some ways. My partner and I and kids, we'd moved to Brecon and I was basically mummying most of the time and doing some concerts. And then this festival kind of came our way, really, and I was asked to participate, to give a concert with whoever I wanted to. So I immediately thought of some of my closest musical friends. And that's basically how Brecon Baroque formed. But not just that, but also to kind of get involved in the educational side, which was a new thing for me in that way. I mean, I was teaching at various institutions already, but to get involved with kids and how to approach that and with kind of a mix of modern and Baroque instruments, all of that, that was all new to me. But I thought, yeah, let's do this. Yeah. And it's still going. Yeah, 18 years later. It's quite small, the festival. It's only 4 days long, but it's powerful. There's lots to it, lots of different facets and lots of different levels. And most of all, there's a lot of joy. But basically, the group Brecon Baroque kind of came out of that, really, because I got together most of my friends, either kind of colleagues or just friends from college days even. And we did some chamber music concerts in the first few festivals. And then the group basically kind of took on its own identity and was asked out, as it were, away from Brecon. And we started going all over the place, including, you know, abroad.
World's your oyster. But Bach, above all, Johann Sebastian Bach, is and always was the beating heart of the group. Would that be fair to say?
It's always been like that for me. I mean, I find it very difficult to program a concert without Bach in it. It feels a little incomplete somehow. Part of my thinking, because I'd played the Bach Violin Concertos a fair bit, but I really wanted to do it single strings, actually. I just wanted to have that very close, direct contact with the players.
Yeah.
It gives the individual players a very different kind of sense of responsibility and belonging, I think, as well.
And so the violin concertos were a natural place for your first recording with them.
Exactly. Yeah, it just felt, oh yeah, this is it. This is what we're going to do. And so we did.
Thank you. the opening movement of Bach's Violin Concerto in E major, Brecken Baroque, and my guest today, Rachel Podger. Rachel, did you have a feeling, an inkling from the very start, that this was going to be a special group, you know, one in which you could do things differently? You had that freedom, that artistic license.
Definitely. Yeah. I kind of knew all the players, of course, from playing in other groups. I thought it would work really well to actually have some of my students along in the violin department. And there were these two, Bojan Čižić and Johannes Palmzola at the time, who'd just kind of come out of college and were freelancing, doing lots of different things. It was just a joy, really, because we spoke the same language and they were very much individual players in their own right. And of course, they then very much flew the nest and are incredibly successful in what they do. And I'm very kind of proud to think that they played in Brecken Baroque. It was invigorating, really, because everyone was fitting in with each other, but at the same time having their own voice and kind of contributing so much to the overall sense of music making, but very much in their own way.
It feels like the spirit of the festival as well is this meeting place of players and this kind of environment, a platform, if you like, for new talent and experimentation in a way.
Absolutely, yes. And then kind of combining different kinds of players together, you always get a different dynamic every time. And even though today we have a kind of pool of players and we've got lots of kind of different people coming along and playing, each time there is that core of a sense of music making, which I like to foster, which kind of comes from the musicians themselves rather than kind of having an imprint from a director from the top saying, right, this is how it goes.
Well, it seems only right then that your next recording was showcasing the members. You know, we moved from solo concertos to double and triple concertos, bringing in the wind players as well.
Yes, absolutely. So flute player Katie Bircher and oboist Alex Bellamy, been playing for years together in different ensembles. And so it was very natural to do it with them.
Well, I can't resist a chance to hear the slow movement from the Bach double violin concerto with Bojan.
With Bojan, yeah.
This is the Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3. I'm Hannah French, and with me is violinist Rachel Podger, whom you heard there with Bojan Cicic as soloists in Bach's Double Violin Concerto. Happily, Rachel's taking us backstage today with her group Brecken Baroque. But Rachel, can you tell us a bit more about, well, the ensemble's home, Brecken Baroque Festival itself? It's certainly become an October fixture in the calendar.
It's a wonderful thing to look forward to every year. And actually, we have meetings throughout the year, of course, with the committee. I've got this lovely dedicated team of people who live in the Brecken area. So without them, it would be much, much harder, but probably impossible to run. So basically, it's a four-day festival. We have definite slots. So Friday night is the first night every year, and it's always in Brecken Cathedral, which is a beautiful place to visit, even if you're not going to a concert. Saturday night is always in the theatre in Brecken, Theatre Brycheiniog. That's normally a kind of chamber music concert and always features Brecken Baroque. So this year we are featuring lots of French composers. So we have Rameau, and we're doing a true sonata by Elisabeth Jacquet de la Guerre. And then of course we have the Bach in there. So we're doing the musical offering true sonata, which I absolutely adore. And Telemann, of course, is in there, one of the Paris quartets. Anyway, so that's Saturday night. Sunday night always features a guest group. And this year we have some French-Canadian players. We have Mélisande Corriveau and Eric Milne. And then on Monday night, in a way, this feels like the climax, although it's on a Monday. Often it's in half term, so we get a whole load of kids along. It's the Brecken Baroque Festival Orchestra. So we call on talented kids in the area, local kids and students of mine, ex-students. So it's a bit of a kind of party for them, kind of getting back together, reunion. And some of the Brecken Baroque pros who stay on. And so we have a whole day of very intense rehearsal on the Sunday. Then Monday, lots of rehearsal and concert in the evening. And it's amazing how you can expand 2 days. It's amazing what happens overnight. I don't quite know what happens because we start the rehearsal, I'm thinking, okay, so tomorrow's the concert. All right, let's go. And then off I go, you know, jumping about and trying to make things happen. And they do. They do happen. The actual, in the concert, there's such a buzz. And the principles of music making and listening and articulation and all the stuff that we've been talking about in the rehearsals of expression, of course, and rhetorical devices in the music and you name it. It's all dealt with in some form. And people really take it on board. It's really wonderful. Yeah, so it's a very joyful event.
Wow. What a concentrated weekend, though. I mean, I'm guessing people stay. It feels like a residential event.
Yes, you do have to stay. Yeah. So it's great for the town.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, time for more music. Vivaldi next. And your first recording of his music with Brecken Baroque, you very deliberately chose his Opus 3 set of concertos, L'Estro Armonico. They feel so well suited to the group. It's like this recording fulfills some of the grand plans that Vivaldi'd had, or at least hoped for them. Was that the plan?
Well, it's such effervescent music, isn't it? It's incredibly joyful. This really is very Prosecco-like. It's very, very bubbly, buzzing energy. Some of it is really raw energy. When you have these kind of four violin concerto pieces, of course, there's music making together, but there's also you're pitted against each other, sometimes in twos, sometimes in three and one, sometimes one, 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 one. It's a little bit like going out on stage and doing a bit of a race or just showing off, and then someone else will just go, no, not like that. Because Vivaldi was a showman, wasn't he? But then, of course,
Absolutely.
At the same time, you have these incredibly beautiful slow movements with so much pathos and so much kind of inner desire to communicate the most emotion you've ever felt in your whole existence. So that juxtaposition of emotions and the contrast within that and everything in between is what he gets. And that just suited us down to the ground. We had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Brecon Baroque, playing from Vivaldi's L'Estro Armonico, their multi-award-winning recording, with Rachel Podger at the helm. And she's still with me now. Rachel, you could say that Brecon Baroque, with its cast of characters, is a modern-day equivalent to the sorts of instrumentalists that Vivaldi worked with. But then, especially that band of musicians that Bach assembled so very regularly at Café Zimmermann, the Leipzig Collegium Musicum. Mm. I mean, is that something of a model for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, if I could go back in time, I'd love to have been in that cafe. It's such a shame it doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
It was torn down.
Just the atmosphere of that place, because, yeah, you're there to drink coffee, fabulous. But, you know, those acoustics, that's what we've lost. And Bach was so obsessed with acoustics. It must have sounded fab.
Yes, I guess it did. Although we do know that they often played in the garden,
didn't they? In the summer when the weather was fine.
Yes, in the beer garden. So that would have been a different experience altogether. But I think it was really about the music making and showing the next piece, because that was the opportunity, wasn't
it? And for Bach as much as for them, in a way, wasn't it? I mean,
absolutely.
So many pieces that were reworked, viewed in a different light, or a soloist comes into town and they go, oh, we need a bassoon part here, and, you know, all that kind of thing.
Yeah, all these circumstantial things, absolutely.
Right. But that brings us to a recording that you made of the Art of Fugue, that late great piece that instinctively suggests a keyboard instrument and Bach himself sitting at it. But like so many of those works, it's really open to possibilities.
Yes, especially because the way it's written, you could interpret it as kind of different lines rather than on kind of one stave. So that's quite interesting just to see.
But you took it and ran with it.
We did. Well, partly it's just for selfish reasons. I really wanted to play it. I wanted to experience it. It's one of those rite of passages. It's incredible to be a cog in the wheel and to be a very important part of the wheel. Otherwise, without you, it wouldn't spin. It wouldn't turn at all.
Right.
In concert music, every voice is just as important. And your micromanagement of your line is essential, because you will influence someone else right next to you. Whatever you do, it's going to cause something that's going to have an effect. And that challenge is just mind-blowing, and it's so much fun as well when it works.
the art of Brecon Baroque in Bach's The Art of Fugue. Rachel Podger, I sense that your performances in Brecon, you know, they remain the anchoring point, the spiritual home of the ensemble. But of course, you play all over the rest of the UK and the world, for that matter.
Yes, well, we have. Yes. Yeah, we. I remember a wonderful trip to Holland, actually, quite kind of early on. It's a very bonding experience, of course, touring. Mm. Even though you're playing the same programme over and over, halls are very different. Audiences are completely different from evening to evening. Yeah. In fact, I would go to say that every night is unique. You know, because you're only going to have that collection of people and that acoustic in that hall at that time, only then.
Right. So first, and how formative for a relatively new group as well to actually do that fairly early on, to really find each other's sound.
Yes.
And because that is what sets Brecon Baroque apart, the sound and that, you know, you can hear those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the music. It's like a interactive score, the way that you hear it. And that comes from experimenting like that, doesn't it? With the same music night after night in different settings.
Absolutely, yes. And just kind of a lot of intensity. It seems to kind of go along with what we do. Maybe that does come from the festival, because that's that kind of experience. Four days, it's submerged in music kind of throughout the day as well.
Well, on these very airwaves, I've certainly described you as an adopted Venetian when it comes to Vivaldi.
Very flattering.
Your musical adventuring across the floating city is not restricted to his concertos. I'm referring to Grandissima Gravita, an album that came out in 2017 and, well, showcased more of the feisty fiddlers who were about town in the 18th century.
Absolutely, because so many of those feisty fiddlers were also fantastic composers, especially Veracini. I mean, what a weirdo. He really was a very strange guy. He wrote very long sonatas, very beautiful, but full of caricaturing with strange accents and strange swells that he would depict very clearly into the music. We do know that he was feisty as well, and he got into trouble, you know, he got into some arguments with fellow musicians. And apparently after such an argument with Pizendal, who was the leader of the court orchestra in Dresden, apparently Veracini jumped out of the window in a rant, or maybe he was trying to escape. Broke his foot and then limped after that, yeah. But he had amazing command of the bow. He had a rather long bow. He loved long phrases with long slurs, so he needed a long bow. And his bow control was exemplary, so much that Tartini heard Veracini play and was so taken by his sound and his bow control that he locked himself away to practice. I love that story.
These guys aren't doing anything by halves. Let's hear Capriccio by Veracini.
Thank you.
Brecken Baroque and Rachel Podger playing a Capriccio by Veracini. Now, while we've one foot in Venice, Rachel, let's not miss another chance to encounter Vivaldi, because there's one particular set of his concertos, one that's loved, occasionally loathed, but then loved again, and it's, of course, the Four Seasons. Now, many people cut the teeth on it. You chose to wait before recording them.
Mm.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, it just seemed a little obvious as a first Vivaldi recording, so I went for something lesser known, the Stravaganza. I cut my teeth on those, basically, I mean, in terms of recording. I suppose there was also a kind of sense of, let's wait to see what else occurs, not just within the music, but between the music and you. But in order to do that, you need to kind of be able to relate to it, so you need some life experience.
Yeah, I suppose that the real bottom line is that there are so many recordings of them, and you know, why do we need another one? Thank goodness you recorded them, because we did need this.
Oh,
we did need this recording. No, it's the absolute truth. But you know, you did bring a different perspective, a freshness. I promised thunderbolts at the top of the show, and you deliver them left, right and centre. There are so many stormy moments, but then it's about those contrasts, as you've already said, with Vivaldi and with all of this Baroque music.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just mind-blowing what he does. They're so inventive. And just imagine hearing that for the first time or playing it and knowing, oh yeah, there's some birdies flying around and they're in canon. Okay. So just recognising so many emotions that we all feel, like fear, or joyful dancing, or being drunk, sleeping it off, shivering, being cold, ice skating and falling over, the impact that that has on your body, all of those things, that there's so much you can relate to physically as
yes.
well as emotionally.
Yes. I mean, they run the danger of being caricatures of themselves. And that's where I think this recording just takes off, because that's not what's happening here. What we get are the real visceral, in-your-face emotions. I'm thinking about the beginning of winter. Mm. You know, there is no calm. There is no, oh, what a beautiful vista of ice.
Yeah.
You know, you guys arrive.
Yeah, it's scary. I think it really must have been scary back in the day to be confronted with so much ice and no heating and not very warm clothes. I mean, it was dangerous. And that sense of danger is you need to feel it and you need to show it in the playing. So I think the Ponticello start is shocking.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, we're not going to hear that now. As it's October, let's stay in autumn. The spoils of the harvest have been consumed. The hangovers have been slept off. And the last movement picks up with the hunt. Hunt, the third movement of Autumn from Vivaldi's The Four Seasons, played by Brecon Baroque, the ensemble under the spotlight on today's Early Music Show. Soloist and director violinist Rachel Podger is with me. And Rachel, as a festival ensemble at heart, Brecon Baroque, well, you're a wonderful fit for residencies and other festivals and series too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. We've been very fortunate to have various residencies all around the place. Wigmore Hall and Edinburgh and Lichfield ongoing at the moment, King's Place. And so it's lovely to have kind of relationships with halls, with places, not just with all the backstage people and you kind of know how it all works, but also the audiences, because, you know, they tend to kind of come back, which is very nice.
Definitely. But I suppose when audiences weren't there during lockdown, what did you get up to?
In a way, it was a gift for artists, I think. That kind of quiet time. Yeah. So I had all sorts of weird and wonderful ideas, one of which was actually to transcribe the Goldberg Variations. I knew that I couldn't do it and I didn't want to attempt to, so I needed help. And so I asked my friend and colleague, Chad Kelly, who knows a lot of Bach.
Wasn't exactly local.
No. Well, actually, at the time, he was in Germany for a bit.
Okay.
And then he moved to Australia when
yes,
he could.
Yes, that's what I'm alluding to. I suppose, the awful practicalities aside, the good practicalities of lockdown is that the world did become a much smaller place, so it didn't really matter where he was.
No, that's right. And it didn't really matter if, you know, it was 3 o'clock in the morning for me, because I didn't have to get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I was initially thinking about a string quartet, kind of along the lines of the Art of Fugue.
Right.
With a five-string cello.
Yeah.
Then I thought, actually maybe it needs to get bigger. So we were just going through the piece and just looking at the score on Zoom and see, oh, actually this could work for flute, or no, I can really hear Oboe d'Amore in this, and this could do this. And so after those discussions, Chad would basically go away and come up with something, and then he'd send it to me on email and I'd look at a few of the variations, and then we'd discuss again, and so it'd go back and forth. And then I was trying stuff on the violin, and then in the end we called it the Goldberg Variations Reimagined, because it ended up being a piece for 9 instruments. So you have 5 string players, so your usual string quartet plus violone. So the cellist is a 5-string player. Harpsichord, flute, oboe, not just normal, but also da caccia and d'amore, and bassoon. And in a way, it's really interesting what it's become, because we've performed it quite a bit since and recorded it, of course. And it feels like an oratorio now. You don't actually miss the singer. It's a little bit like an oratorio without words. There's so much being told in those arias. And you hear the canons in a completely different way, because he always sets off instruments against each other, so they're not the same instrument. Some of the tone colours are really exploratory, I also think. For instance, combining the bassoon and the viola on an inner part, I think that's a real brainwave. It's really, really beautiful. And it's a real experience to play. You feel like you've just done one of the Passions when you come off. It's got a life and death in it. Thank you.
Bach's Goldberg Variations, arranged for solo violin and ensemble, reimagined specifically for Rachel Podger and Brecon Baroque by harpsichordist and scholar Chad Kelly. Well, Rachel, there's just one last moment from this album of mostly British music that I'd love to play to end today's Early Music Show. And it's a composer that perhaps you wouldn't expect to find on there. let's briefly talk shop.
That's an excellent joke. Yes, this is a piece by Johann Schopp, German violinist, 17th century, who wrote a lovely version, quite simple but very beautiful, on Dowland's Lacrimae. So it's just two lines, just the violin kind of improvising around the theme with a lute accompaniment, here played by Liz Kenny.
The Lacrimae by Johann Schopp, his solo violin take on John Dowland's Flow My Tears. It was played by the violinist Rachel Podger with Elizabeth Kenny on the lute. That ends today's Early Music Show, presented by Hannah French and produced in Salford by Les Pratt. Hannah's back next week with another concert from the York Early Music Festival. The medieval ensemble A Potre Paique will be performing songs from the late Middle Ages, exploring different portrayals of women. You can hear that next Sunday at 5 o'clock.
On BBC iPlayer, we all know the familiar faces of our solar system, but our neighbourhood is far stranger than we ever imagined. We've glimpsed lightning storms that rage across Jupiter, ice mountains that tower over Pluto's surface, and giant dust devils on Mars. Thanks to a fleet of spacecraft, these wonders are visible to us as never before in astonishing new detail. Solar System with me, Professor Brian Cox, starts tomorrow on BBC iPlayer.
Now on Radio 3, here's Georgia Mann with this week's Words and Music.
Memories and imaginations of seascapes lie behind some of the loveliest music and writing we have. And this edition of Words and Music offers a full range of encounters with the sea. As the Royal National Lifeboat Institution marks its 200th anniversary, we'll hear the imagined worlds of Children at Sea, written by Catherine Mansfield and Michael Morpurgo. We'll quake at the cliff-like waves in Sebastian Junger's The Perfect Storm, or The Shipping News from Annie Prue, as well as revel in swashbuckling tales by Patrick O'Brien and in Abdulrazak Gurnah's descriptions of Indian Ocean trade. These will be accompanied by music inspired by or evoking the sea, from orchestral pieces that come close to oral metaphor for the ocean itself, to sea shanties and sea hymns giving thanks for rescue. Music by Anna Klein, Elgar, Mumford & Sons and Nitin Sawhney. We'll journey out hopeful, encounter a sudden storm, face disaster, rescue and return to port as true sea dogs. The readers are Carla Henry, Josh Bryant-Jones and Martin McCann.
To and fro, in my little boat I go, sailing far across the sea, all alone, just little me. And the sea is big and strong, and the journey very long. To and fro, in my little boat I go. Sea and sky, quietly on the deck I lie, having just a little rest. I have really done my best in an awful pirate fight, but we captured them all right. Sea and sky, quietly on the boat I lie. Far away, from my home and from my play,